You know that specific kind of that sinking feeling you get when you're reading a job description?
Oh, yeah. The endless bullet points.
Right. You're scanning the bullets and you're nodding your head. You're thinking, I can do that. I've done that. I invented that exact process at my last job.
You know, functionally, you can do the work.
Exactly. But then you scroll down to the bottom line and it says, bachelor's degree required.
And just like that, you're out.
Disqualified. You don't even get to make your case to a human being.
It's the ultimate gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's incredibly frustrating on a personal level, but if you actually zoom out, it's actually a systemic disaster.
Yeah, and that's what we're digging into today. Because I think we usually just accept that this is, how the world works, right? You get the piece of paper, you get the job.
Right, the traditional pipeline.
But we're looking at some research today that argues this isn't just annoying for the applicant. It is arguably the single largest inefficiency in the global economy right now.
It really is not an exaggeration.
Yeah.
We are effectively taking massive amounts of human potential people who have the skills,
Yeah.
but just lack the pedigree, and we are locking them out of the economy.
Yeah.
We're prioritizing the signal over the actual capability.
So today we are doing a deep dive into the concept of the skills first ecosystem.
Yes.
And before anyone rolls their eyes at the buzzwords, because I know ecosystem gets thrown around a lot in corporate speak,
It definitely does.
this is actually about a fundamental rewiring of how we hire, how we train, and how economies actually grow.
And we are working off a very fresh document to guide us today.
Yeah, let's bring that up. It's called Roundtable Insights 4, Skills First, Policy and Impact.
This is hot off the press.
All
It
right.
comes from a major session held on February 10th, 2026.
Just recently.
Exactly. And it was co-organized by the Institute for Adult Learning, the IAL, and the OECD.
The heavy hitters.
For sure. They
Yeah.
looked at 23 exemplary cases across 15 different
Yeah.
economies. And the core mission of this roundtable, and really the document itself, was to solve a very specific economic paradox. They call it the transformation gap.
Okay, let's start right there. The transformation gap. It sounds a bit like a sci-fi trope,
A little bit, yeah.
but I'm guessing it's less about robots and more about, wasted money.
Spot on. Think about how much money governments and companies spend on training.
Billions.
Billions. Upskilling and reskilling are basically the flavors of the decade. But if you look at the macro data, that massive investment often doesn't actually translate into productivity gains or even actual job mobility for the workers.
So we are paying to train people, but they aren't getting better jobs and the companies aren't actually getting more productive.
Correct. That is the gap. It's the space between the investment in skills, the supply side, and the actual utilization of those skills in the real economy.
So the connection is missing.
Exactly. We have built a massive engine for creating skills, but the plumbing that connects that engine to the actual jobs is just completely broken.
Okay, so naturally, the internet solution to this, and I see this on social media all the time, is just, burn the universities.
Right.
Is this report advocating that we just ditch degrees entirely? Is that the big fix?
No, and that's a really crucial distinction to make right up front. The panelists at the roundtable explicitly called that a false dichotomy.
Okay.
Because if you're hiring a structural engineer to build a bridge or a brain surgeon to operate on,
Yeah, I want that degree on the wall.
preferably frame.
And from an accredited institution, please.
Exactly. For regulated sectors, degrees are totally essential for safety standards and baseline competency.
Right.
But for the vast majority of the modern economy, tech, operations, creative work, sales, logistics, requiring a degree is often just a lazy proxy for competence.
A filter?
Yeah. The report argues we don't need to destroy degrees. We just need to fix the policy fragmentation that makes the degree the only trusted currency.
Policy fragmentation. That sounds like classic government speak for nobody talks to each other.
It does.
But is it really that simple? Is it just people in different offices not sending emails?
It's deeper than just poor communication. It's totally structural. The report actually identifies three specific silos in government that are working against each other because they have completely different goals.
What are they?
You have industrial policy, labor policy, and skills policy.
Break those down for me. Why are they fighting?
Well, let's look at industrial policy. Historically, their whole job is capital investment. They buy machines, they build factories, they try to lure foreign investment to build a new plant.
Okay.
And their metric for success is usually just raw job creation numbers.
Right. A politician stands at a podium and says, "We opened a factory and created 10,000 jobs."
Exactly. But they rarely pause to ask, do the people we have in this specific region actually know how to run these specific new machines?
They just focus on the hardware.
Right. They assume the humans will just kind of appear.
Magic.
Yeah. Then you have labor policy. Their historic mandate is protection. Wages, safety standards, workers' rights.
Which is important.
Very important. But they tend to focus on protecting the current job, keeping you in the exact seat you have now, rather than helping you move to the new job that industrial policy just created.
So industrial is building this future that labor isn't actually preparing people to move into.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And then you have the third silo, which is skills policy.
The education folks.
Usually the education ministry, yeah. Mm. And they are completely obsessed with supply. They measure success by butts in seats, how many people graduated, how many certificates did we issue this year?
But let me guess, they aren't actually checking if the market needs those specific certificates.
That's the disconnect. So to use a slightly different analogy, imagine industrial policy decides the country is going to switch from playing baseball to playing soccer.
Okay.
So they build all these really expensive soccer stadiums. Meanwhile, skills policy is still in the gym, training everyone to hit home runs because, well, that's what the curriculum says. And labor policy is just standing on the sidelines, making sure the baseball players on the bench have really good health insurance.
Wow. And the result is that transformation gap. You have fit players. You have nice stadiums. You have safe benches. But literally nobody knows how to play the game on the field.
That is the fundamental failure of the current system. The roundtable argues that to fix this, you can't just throw more money at random training courses.
Because you're just training more baseball players.
Exactly. You need systemic integration. You need a specific government function and integrator that forces these three policy areas to actually coordinate.
Okay, let's assume for a second we can get the government to coordinate perfectly.
The big assumption.
A massive assumption, but let's just go with it. We still have the problem of the hiring manager.
Right.
Because even if I have the skills and the government agrees I have the skills, if I don't have the bachelor's degree, the employer still views me as a massive risk.
They do.
How do we solve that trust problem?
Economists call this information asymmetry. It's just a fancy way of saying the employer doesn't know what you know. They can't see inside your brain.
Yeah.
A degree is a safe signal because at the very least, it proves you can stick with something for 4 years and follow complex instructions.
It shows you have grit and you can navigate a bureaucracy.
Exactly. So if we want to move away from degrees, we have to replace that signal with something just as robust.
Yeah.
We need flexible recognition mechanisms that are backed by hard data, not just self-reported claims.
So a LinkedIn badge or a, you know, a generic sentence on a resume isn't going to cut it.
Not at all. Anyone can write expert in Excel on a resume.
True.
The report highlights some really strong examples of how to actually fix this.
Yeah.
One of the strongest ones comes from Singapore. They have something called the Careers and Skills Passport.
How is that different from just a digital resume?
A resume is a story you tell about yourself. This passport is an immutable record.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it pulls administrative data directly from the government and from verified training providers. So it's not you saying, I'm good at Python.
Right.
It's the system certifying this person completed this specific verified course in 2025 and actively utilized the skill in this specific role.
So it validates the skill with the same weight and authority as a university transcript.
Exactly. It completely removes the he said, she said aspect of hiring. And the EU is actually doing something similar with their individual learning accounts.
What's that?
Think of it like a digital wallet for your skills. The idea is to make your skills portable. You own the data, and you can show it to an employer instantly.
That's huge.
It reduces the risk for the hiring manager because the validation comes from a trusted third party, not just the applicant making a claim.
This feels incredibly necessary right now because of another factor the report mentioned, the elephant in every room these days, artificial intelligence.
Yes, the AI noise problem.
Right. I mean, today I can go to a tool, paste a job description, and ask it to write me a perfect cover letter and tailor my resume keywords to match the job exactly.
In seconds.
Yeah, in 10 seconds.
And so can 10,000 other applicants.
So the signal-to-noise ratio in hiring has basically tanked.
Right.
Every single applicant looks perfect on paper.
Which paradoxically makes the skills-first approach even more urgent.
How so?
When every resume looks perfect, the piece of paper becomes totally meaningless.
Yeah.
Employers are drowning in these high-quality fakes.
That makes sense.
They are going to need verified data sources like that skills passport to actually distinguish who can do the real work. We are moving from a world of claimed skills to verified skills.
It's almost like a defense mechanism for the labor market at this point.
It has to be.
Okay, let's look at the actual mechanics of this. The roundtable laid out a framework, and they called it the skills to jobs journey.
Right.
And they broke it into 3 miles, first, middle, and last.
Yes. And the main critique here is that we currently spend almost all of our money and all of our attention on the middle mile.
The middle mile being the training itself.
Yes. The courses, the boot camps, the universities, the workshops. Governments absolutely love funding this because it's tangible.
You can take a photo of it?
Exactly. You can take a photo of a classroom. You can put a neat number in a press release. We trained 50,000 people this year.
But the system is failing at the first mile.
Completely. Hmm. First mile is navigation. It's answering the very basic question, what should I actually learn?
Right.
Most people are just guessing. They hear coding is good, so they spend months learning coding. But maybe the local market is totally saturated with junior coders.
Yeah.
Or they hear green energy is the future, but they don't know specifically which technical skills the energy companies actually need.
So we are flying blind into the middle mile. We take the course, but it might be completely the wrong course.
Exactly. The report emphasizes this concept of skills foresight, using real-time labor market data to tell people, hey, don't learn X, learn Y. We need to guide people before they spend their time and money.
And then there's the crash in the last mile.
The last mile is utilization. This is the matching process.
Putting the person in the job.
Yes. And this is where that integrator role we talked about becomes critical. The report notes a major governance failure here. Usually, skills data sits in the education ministry, and labor market data sits in the Ministry of Manpower or Labor.
We're back to the silos.
If those two databases don't talk to each other, you cannot solve the last mile. You can't match the graduate to the open job because the systems are literally speaking different languages.
So the education ministry knows you took course 101.
Right. But the labor ministry knows the market desperately needs skill B. Unless you map course 101 to skill B, the match never happens.
I want to pivot to the corporate side of this for a second.
Sure.
Because I can hear managers listening to this right now thinking, great, now I have to track every micro-credential of every single employee.
It sounds exhausting.
Yeah, they're thinking, I have a business to run. I don't have time to be a university registrar for my staff.
That's a totally valid fear. If this feels like a compliance burden, companies just won't do it.
No.
Or they'll do it badly, just checking boxes to keep the government regulators happy. It has to be tied to their actual strategy. Well, the report highlights a really fascinating approach from Singapore to solve exactly this. They call it the Queen Bee model.
The Queen Bee, I assume this refers to like the industry leaders.
Yes. The big, massive anchor companies in an ecosystem.
Mm.
In this model, the government incentivizes the queen bees to train not just their own internal employees, but the employees of their suppliers and smaller partners.
That's so interesting. So if I'm a major logistics firm, I might be training the staff at the tiny trucking startups or the independent warehouse companies I work with?
Exactly. And you do it not out of charity, but because it actually improves your whole supply chain.
Right.
If your suppliers are faster, smarter, and more digitally fluent, your business runs better. It lists the competency of the entire sector.
It basically creates a selfish reason to be generous with training.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And the EU has a similar initiative called the Pact for Skills. It basically moves training from being an HR thing, which is often the first thing cut in a recession, to being a core supply chain strategy, which is essential.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, we have to talk about the risks.
Let's do it.
Because whenever we talk about breaking jobs down into just skills or tasks, I get a little nervous about the gigification of everything.
The fragmentation of work.
Yeah. It sounds like we're just turning everyone into a freelance contractor. And the unions at this roundtable raised a massive red flag about this, didn't they?
They absolutely did. The Trade Union Advisory Committee, TOAC, warned about something they call taskification.
Taskification. That sounds a dystopian.
It is a real risk. If you break a job down into tiny little components, coding, data entry, project management, employers might start saying, I don't need to hire a full-time employee with benefits. I just need to buy 10 hours of coding skill and 5 hours of design skill from the open market.
And suddenly nobody actually has a job. Everyone just has digs, nobody has health insurance, and there's zero long-term stability.
That's the danger.
Mm.
If a skills-first approach just becomes a convenient excuse to hollow out standard employment contracts, it will fail.
Right.
But the union's counter-argument in the report was really profound. They argue that if you want a dynamic, skills-first workforce, you actually need stronger employment protections, not weaker ones.
Okay, connect those dots for me, because usually businesses argue that worker protection makes the market rigid. Why would protection lead to dynamism?
It comes down to fear. Think about basic human psychology in the workplace.
Okay.
If a worker thinks that a retraining program or skills analysis is just corporate code for "we are figuring out how to automate you or replace you," they will resist it. They will hide their knowledge. They will dig their heels in and refuse to adapt.
Right. Like, I'm not teaching the new AI tool how to do my job.
Exactly. But if they have employment security, if they feel genuinely safe in their livelihood, they are much more willing to take the risk of learning new technologies. They become partners in the transformation instead of roadblocks.
So security is actually the foundation of agility. You can't be agile if you're terrified.
That's a great way to put it. The quote from the session was that employment protection is an enabling condition for learning. You just can't have a learning culture if everyone is constantly looking over their shoulder.
That makes total sense. And that brings us to the final hurdle, governance.
The big one.
We've talked about silos, we've talked about data passports, but the report mentions that the role of the integrator, like the person or agency trying to herd all these cats, is the hardest job in government.
It really is.
Why is it so hard? Is it just standard bureaucracy?
It's bureaucracy, sure, but it's mostly about time horizons. This is really the core insight of the whole report for me. Political cycles are short.
3 to 4 years, usually.
Right. But building a functioning skills ecosystem takes 10 to 20 years.
So no politician wants to plant a tree that won't give shade until 3 elections from now.
Exactly. The minister wants to cut a ribbon on a brand new school today. That looks great on the evening news.
Yeah.
They do not want to invest millions of dollars in a complex back-end data integration system that no one can physically see and which only pays off in 2035.
So the political incentives are totally misaligned with the economic reality.
Completely. And that's exactly why these reforms often die. A new administration comes in, they want their own quick wins, and they just scrap the old plan. The report argues that to make this work, you need coordination by design.
Meaning what, exactly?
It means you can't just rely on the goodwill of the current ministers to get along and share data. It has to be mandated by law.
Oh, I see.
There has to be a strict statutory requirement for industrial, labor, and skills policies to align, regardless of who is currently sitting in the office.
It needs to be institutionally locked in. It can't just be a handshake deal at a cabinet meeting.
Yes, because otherwise, the moment the administration changes, everyone retreats back into their comfortable silos. Industrial goes back to buying machines, labor goes back to protecting incumbents, and that transformation gap just opens right up again.
So pulling this all together, we are basically trying to move from a train and pray model where we just educate people and hope they get a job to a true precision ecosystem.
That's the goal, a fully synchronized dance between all those different policies.
So for the listener, what is the immediate takeaway here? If I'm sitting at my desk right now feeling a bit anxious about my career and where things are heading, what do I do differently tomorrow?
If you're an individual, you need to stop relying entirely on the static resume. Start building your dynamic portfolio. Look for those verified credentials we talked about, micro-credentials, digital badges, things that objectively prove what you can do, not just where you went to school.
Yeah.
And advocate for your own data. If your region or country offers something like a skills passport, claim it. Be proactive.
And what if you're a leader or a hiring manager?
You really have to ask yourself if you are suffering from that degree of bias. Are you leaving amazing talent on the table just because you're filtering for a piece of paper that honestly might not even matter for the role?
Probably, yes.
And look at that queen bee concept. Are you just consuming talent from the open market, or are you actually helping to build the supply of it within your industry?
It really seems like we need to fundamentally change the question we ask about the economy as a whole, because we always hear it framed as jobs versus skills.
Yes.
Like, let's just create the jobs first, get the numbers up, and we'll worry about the skills later.
And the report closes by saying that is a totally dangerous fallacy. Because if you just create jobs without deliberately developing the capabilities to actually do them, you don't get a booming economy. You get a low productivity trap.
A low productivity trap.
Yeah. You get a situation where people are working really hard in bad jobs with no future, simply because they don't have the skills to make those jobs better or more efficient. The tension between jobs and skills is a false dichotomy.
So we need to co-design them from the start. Don't build the factory without the training plan in place. Don't launch the training course without the real-time labor market data.
Exactly. They absolutely have to move in lockstep.
It sounds so simple when you say it out loud, but it changes absolutely everything about how we operate.
It's a massive shift.
Well, that's a wrap for this deep dive into the skills-first ecosystem. A big thanks to the IAL and the OECD for the insights in this report. It's dense material, but the implications are just massive for all of us navigating this market.
Just keep connecting the dots.
We'll see you on the next one.